Thank you very much again for tuning into the Chronic Man podcast and wishing you all a very happy 2024. And today we have a very special guest, which is Paul Hicks. And he's a miniature designer, a very good one, in fact. I've just purchased some of the models from Footsore Miniatures to get them in my hands to paint them. I've been dreaming and just been so obsessed with these miniatures since I've seen them from the Baron's War range that I had to have them. So that's my Christmas gift to myself, as I don't often buy miniatures myself, to be honest. So they've been really, really nice to find this particular range of historical miniatures that Paul's going to talk to me about that, and plus his foray into Games Workshop at a very young age. So I hope you enjoy this interview, guys, and let's get on with it. Okay, mate. So, thank you again for taking the time to come to speak with me and the audience here at the Crown of Command. And now I got to know about you through your work, and of course you're a traditional sculptor
That's right.
A miniature designer, which is fantastic. And I got to listen to an interview with you. I think it was with Boris from Wearmouth Studios, and they're a new upcoming YouTube channel talking about the Baron's War and the system that you work with Andy Hobday in creating the miniatures for, which is proudly displayed behind me because I absolutely love the outrimmer. I'm probably not pronouncing that. It's a French word. I'm butchering it completely, but it sounds beautiful when a French person says it. But, you know, outrimmer, maybe. Outrimmer.
Yeah, there you go.
And I love the miniatures you designed for that. So I thought, and I heard that you work for Games Workshop. So I thought, man, we can tie those in together and talk about your history with Games Workshop. You know, your current work now as a miniature designer and how that all worked in together and all that as well. So for people who don't know who you are, could you please let us know? Give us an introduction.
Well, my name's Paul Hicks. I've been a traditional miniature sculptor now. I think you need to define that this day and age, for just over 20 years. I've always pretty much worked in the gaming industry, from being a part-timer when I was 16 all the way through to now, really, with a short interlude working for a wood floor company as a salesman.
Right. So you started like basically at 16 working a part-timer as Games Workshop, is that right?
Yep. My first time was when I was 14. I was worked at the GW, the Games Workshop in Darling Road, Hammersmith, when I was 14 as a work experience. And then when I was 16, that was 92, I became a part-timer. And then I worked at GW in Plaza for a long time, and then had a bit of time out to go do my college work. And in 95, when I was 19, I started full-time at Games Workshop Harrow. And then from there till 2000, I worked for Games Workshop in the retail department.
Okay. All happy days working for GW then?
Well, I think, you're a veteran, aren't you? Well, the thing is, I was always about making figures and stuff like that. I was never really into I prefer to sit down and paint as opposed to play intro games. Yeah. So I did it, but it wasn't, wasn't the thing I really wanted to do. I really wanted to sit down, paint toy soldiers and convert miniatures, really.
Me too. I think that's why they got rid of me out of the Plaza. They sent me to Luton.
Oh, well, there you go. I wonder, was Luton like some of the stores I worked at, which was Richmond and Kensington, that you got no one in during the day?
Yeah.
So you just spent the time making my own figures. And that's pretty much where I sort of learned to sculpt, really. Just converting miniatures and And well, no one ever came into the shop. And instead of making stuff for the store, I s just kind of sneakily made stuff for myself instead. Yeah, I'm sure I wasn't alone at sort of taking that liberty of working at Games Workshop.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think looting you could get away with that. I would just sit there all day and paint because no one would come in, especially
Yeah.
through the week, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there'd be days where you only make like £16 for the whole day. And if if you weren't making stuff for yourself, I mean, it's pretty much, you would go completely crazy. And it was like that weird thing. You weren't allowed to make stuff for yourself, but if you did, you kind of started selling it because you were more enthused about it than, or I was more enthused about it than the next release that Games Workshop were, going to put out. So I think, yeah, in a way it helped me sell stuff, but I'm not sure if it helped sell the things that Games Workshop wanted to sell at the time.
And like, how were you introduced to the like hobby, either through miniatures or tabletop wargaming? Was it like a friend or family member that got you into it, or was it just like just a random walk into a GW one day?
Well, I was always into making models. I mean, my mum and dad, from a very early age. I mean, one of my earliest memories was being told to sort of stay away from the loft hatch while my dad built us a model railway. I must have been about two, and it was something my mum and dad did. My mum's she's quite a good artist. And so they always sort of got me into drawing. I think it's more drawing was something so my mum could watch the Aussie Soap Sullivans during the day. So I was being able to be occupied while she, could watch telly basically. And then making models with my dad and then just making stuff. And then I was. I think it's when I went to high school for the, and then there was a kid there with a magazine called White Dwarf, and I'd never seen it before, and it just, I heard of Games Workshop figures because there was a model shop that had the little blister packs, and you could, they, it was just after they started to move from the solid base to slotter, and you got about five figures in a blister pack for about £1 then. And they always intrigued me. They looked fun, but it was the paints never seemed to adhere. I'd never didn't have any idea of, how to paint them, but they looked cool. So, and then when I went to high school, then I sort of got introduced to White Dwarf. I think the first White Dwarf I ever saw was when they released the new, well, what was new then, but the first line of Terminators, that big flat sort of pizza box of Terminators, and then yeah, I was kind of hooked. And it was the Hammersmith store was only one stop away from my on the tube from my school, so after school I would go get on the tube, bunk on the tube because there was no one at the ticket office, so I would sort of sneak yeah bunk. And then I had a return ticket, so it was no problem at the other end. And then just spend my time at Games Workshop instead of doing homework, basically.
Excellent,
And
excellent.
yeah, from there, sort of. But I've never really been a big gamer. It's always the miniatures that sort of got to me, and the idea of collecting and sort of painting them. That was more that I was into as opposed to the actual gaming itself.
Wonderful. So you built models with your father at home, and then
Yeah.
you got your first gig and work experience at Games Workshop. Did
Yeah.
you have any sort of like modeling mentors that people you sort of looked up to, or people guided you with your sculpting?
Well, there was the first sort of person I was really inspired by was a there's an American figure sculptor. Well, he converts mostly, and it's all historical stuff. There's a guy called Bill Horan, and it's all 54 millimeter, And he did a Siege of Gandamak diorama that was in military modelling. About the same time I got my first White Dwarf. And that's what sort of got me from wanting to make or just have standard like the Atamiya figures and maybe convert them. So that was the first guy. I was just like, this is amazing. You know, it's sort of, I've always, with my modeling, I've never been, when I've seen a kit, I've never wanted that. I've just wanted to make it slightly different. And especially with figures. So I've always been sort of cutting stuff up. And then when I did my work experience, there was a guy who I still see now, is Jim Coburn. And he sat me down and he showed me how to paint properly. And also he was massively into conversions and stuff. So he was sort of just showing me that I could cut bits up and then and make like more interesting figures, but basically trying to keep them, you know, the silhouette and stuff like, you know, to make them look coherent as opposed to just a mass of figures all thrown together. So I would actually say that sort of Jim was the guy that sort of started me off on my GW collection, you know, collecting days. So he, yeah, I owe him a massive debt, which I do tell him most of the time when I see him once a year.
Oh, that's good. That's nice.
Yeah.
You kept in contact with him. That's great.
Yes, yeah. He's a lovely guy.
What particular races were you particularly interested in when you worked at Games Workshop? What kind of things really fascinated you at that time?
I think the first things I got was Undead because they did that amazing army box, which was the Undead Army, which was £10. And I can remember going to the Games Workshop in Harrow. I must have been about 14, 15, and buying that set because it came with, was it like a chariot,
Oh,
some
yeah.
horsemen, and stacks of skeletons. First off, it was the undead. And then the first army I properly collected was, I think, an Orc and Goblin army. When I started to sort of be a part-timer and started to work for Games Workshop. But I've always tended to float towards the more human races, because at that time you had the Bretonians that were pretty much the old sort of citadel historical stuff, and then the Empire, which was the army I actually pretty much collected and painted religiously, just because they were more sort of historically. I've always gone for the more historically accurate stuff. Some of the weirder stuff didn't really do it for me, because in essence, I'm more of a historical gamer than or in have interests. If fantasy elements don't ring true for me, it doesn't really work. So yeah, the Empire was definitely, and especially anything that Perry's created, I was kind of into. Because I thought they had the most realistic style, but I also really loved anything that Jess Goodwin did. But I think that was more for his concept work, because I've always been interested. I mean, my original job that I wanted to do was to work in the film industry and like model making and stuff like that. And then I ended up doing the wrong course at college. I was told that media studies would be where I needed to go as opposed to doing something in art. So I'd lost interest, and then was making models as opposed to doing homework and stuff like that or doing coursework. So anything, when you look at any sort of making of book or any art book, it's just full of concepts. And those are the ones, it's always the ones that never made it to film that I'm more interested in than the ones that actually made it onto film. So those early Jess Goodwin concepts as like Space Marines, where you see the exploded view and all the alternatives. And 9 times out of 10, none of those made them. I think one that really, one of those concepts were in when they were thinking of doing Battlefleet Gothic for the first time, and they had all of Jess Goodwin's concepts for the Imperial Navy that never ever saw the light of day until Kill Team. I think those are the ones that really sparked my imagination.
Interesting. Okay, and you just put in context your t the timeline when you started working Games Workshop. We're talking at like early 90s.
Early 90s. So, I was working part time at the Plaza store when the first boxed Warhammer came out.
Oh.
So the Plastic Orcs and Goblins, and also the was I working there? I think I was part time when the first box 40K came out as well.
Okay, so this is fourth edition fantasy and second edition 40K, yeah?
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And then I was managing Richmond, I think, when third edition 40K came out with the Black Templars.
And I think
So those were kind of game changers, but they were very much a the core, selling the core games.
absolutely, yeah.
But they, think the monopose kind of could never get with the monopose look. I thought I was more interested in sort of those fantastic pictures in the sort of the third edition book, those massed armies that people would put together near the back, that massive games. Those are the ones that really interested me.
Yes, I can understand. I think there was a big transition from third to fourth, and it left some people back in third and not wanting to progress to the fourth edition. And it then it you know it, GW exploded then, and it just went global, and many young people got involved with tabletop wargaming and found miniatures and miniature painting, and it went on from there to be a great success, of course.
Well, it needed to happen for it to grow, but I'm somebody who fears change, so anything like that, I always like, if you look at old pictures, I kind of want to see that, what an old town would look like as opposed to what it looks like now. So any I'm one for nostalgia that I should have no nostalgia for. For a time that I didn't even live in, I have a yearning to see what that's like as opposed to what things look like now.
Sure, no, that's fair enough. And we talked before we came to the interview. You said you worked at the Plaza store, which I actually worked at as well. And I think we may have a mutual friend in Greg. Is it Greg Stevenson?
Greg Stevens, yes.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Greg
Greg.
Stevens. Yeah.
And he I'm well, when I was, because I first worked there, I think I turned up the GW at Plaza on my last day of school. So I just finished GCSEs and we could go. So I just went up there and it was on a Friday. And then because of Greg and his sidekick at the time, Sheep,
Sheep.
I ended,
I know him too.
I ended up in the Astoria Rock night, and at 16 and didn't really know what the hell was going on. Yeah, no, it was good fun.
Oh
Yeah, and Marcus
boy.
Blackman as well was there at
Oh,
the time.
great. Yeah, my longtime friend. Yeah, that's wonderful.
He was there at the time. A guy called Lawrence Widdicombe that I was, he was being a long time friend that I still see every now and again. Made some very good friends while I worked there. So
Lawrence,
I've
I think that's a name that now I remember. I met him a couple of times. He sounded like quite a character, and I remember him being on a diet of Guinness beer for like weeks and weeks on end. He wanted to lose weight or something like that, and I think from memory that he was just on this diet of Guinness beer and nothing else, no solids, just Guinness. Did
Oh, Christ.
the job,
Yeah,
I
that
think.
sounds like Lawrence. Yes.
Yeah, a great bunch
Yeah,
of guys working there at that time.
he ended up the, like most, well, like you said, working at Luton. I think he lived in Hammersmith, but had to manage the Games Workshop in Watford. You know, so
Oh,
it was
wow.
all, yeah. So my first manager job was in Sutton, but I lived in West London. So that was like a 2 hour trek there and a 2 hour trek back. Yeah. Yeah, they never really took into consideration where you lived as where your nearest store was.
So you just did it for the love of the hobby, you know what I mean? You're just,
Oh, yeah. It was all for the
eating,
love of it.
breathing, living off the hobby kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
So they certainly, yeah, took advantage of you there. It was quite a good experience, and I'm sure you had a wonderful time, and sh you know shared experience of working at Games Workshop, meeting the people. And I suppose the people for me was the biggest thing I took away from working at Games Workshop. Met so many great characters, so many people that I really, I felt I made many friends in England, in London at that time, because it was
Yeah.
just they were just generally nice people, you know.
Did you go? What was the pub? It was the one by the Astoria. Was it the Jaw? No.
I'll tell you a story, because Sheep, he was his last day. He was leaving Games Workshop, and I think he went on to doing something with agriculture or farming or something
That's
like that
right.
or whatever.
Yes.
And
Yeah.
I'll never forget this day. We went to the pub across the road there from the plaza.
The Holyrood.
Maybe I can't remember the name of it now, mate, but we all sat there on a big table outside. It might have been in the summer because it probably obviously wasn't that cold then,
Yeah.
but we're sitting there having a beer, and I think Sheep had some miniatures on the tabletop on the table there, looking at them. And this guy came out, and he was holding a pint glass, and I could tell
Yeah.
he was pretty pissed by this time. And he just came up to our table, and he started looking at Sheep, and saying, "I'm gonna kill you! I'm gonna kill you!" And like he just stood there and started screaming at him. He'd never met him before, I don't think. And his mate came out and tried to pull him back, say, "Hey, mate, come on, let's go, let's go." And then he smashed the pint glass right next to me and just broke it in his hand, like his hand was bleeding and that kind of thing, like he was going to stab him and kill him. And then the manager came out and the bouncers came out and grabbed him and threw him down the street. I never forget that day because it was so
Oh,
intense. I've
yeah.
never been in a situation like that before in my life. This guy just came out of nowhere, just want
Yeah.
to kill Sheep. I don't know why. And we're just standing there, just t totally, amazed and astonished at what was happening. And then, yeah, you got thrown down the street, and that was the end of that. So it was a very, it was, that was my last time meeting Sheep, basically.
Yeah, I think I last time I met him was when he was the manager at Harrow, well, but that was about last time I met him. But yeah, he was a character, and then yeah, though him and Greg were pretty inseparable, weren't And also, Greg was well, probably still, well, I'm sure he is, and you don't normally shrink, but he was huge as well, wasn't he? He was quite an imposing character.
He's very tall, lanky, long blonde hair.
Yeah.
He had a very good impression with the ladies. Everywhere we
Oh,
went, all the girls would love him,
Yeah.
he just had that character. He had this very kind of very charismatic personality about him, I think, and people just really took to him really well.
Yeah. Well, especially it was the sort of the height of Guns N' Roses, so he was leaning on the Axl Rose
Yeah,
look
exactly.
with
Look at Axl Rose, mate. Yeah, exactly. He just needed a
the
bandana. He'd be right,
Yeah.
So, and we're talking about the age where everyone had long hair. All the guys had long hair in the store, and I started growing my
Yeah.
hair long as well because it was just the thing to do back then. This is like early 90s when Metallica and all that kind of stuff was, going around, all the heavy metal bands and stuff like that.
Well, we didn't have to wear GW stuff working in the stores. And it was when I think we had a manager, Ed Spettigue, who was good friends with Greg and Sheep. And he was the manager, and we all decided we were going to wear Combats and Games Workshop, right, like the t-shirts they would sell. So to give the sort of the store a bit more of a look, So I think we were like the only store that would do that. And then the red shirts came in. But I think that was, I think it was, I'm sure that was his initiative to do that. I think we kind of had the feeling we were better than other stores, but things we never really mixed with other stores in and around the area. We weren't, there wasn't like, I think later on when I worked for GW, there was a bit more of a sort of a social side to working between the areas, but not then. If you ever saw an area manager, that was, out of the blue type thing. It was very, so yeah, talking about it now, it was great fun. Yeah. But it was like, had to be at £2 an hour.
Absolutely.
It didn't, I think it just about covered my travel to get up there.
Was going to say, yeah, you wouldn't be living it up on a GW
No.
salary anytime soon, that's for sure. I think by the
Yeah.
time you say like paid your rent, you paid your travel costs, you paid for the food you ate every day, and that kind of thing, there wasn't much left in change, just enough to get your 50% discount on your GW figures if you wanted them, kind of thing, you know.
It was, it definitely did it for the love of it as opposed to the work. I mean, I burnt through money that was given to me to sort of go up there as opposed to actually working. There you go. I hardly ever had to buy my own pints. So that was nice.
Yeah, that was a funny thing actually, because every time at the pub it was like, okay, there's five of us, and I wasn't a big beer drinker. I didn't really drink alcohol at all, but those guys really, when they drank pints of the worst Australian beer you could ever think of, which was called Foster's, which no one in Australia ever drank. But apparently it was just really popular in the UK. It was like the cheapest beer you could get, probably. But every time we rocked up there, it'd be like five guys, and the first guy would have to buy the entire round. So by the time you left, you'd drink five pints, they were complete skinful, and you'd have to go back home. And I think some of those times I was I just didn't know how I got back home, basically.
No, it sounds one of the funniest memories. What was that pub called? It was round, so you went up to Tottenham Court Road and turned right at the station on the other side of the road of the plaza. You turn right. And then it was right again where the old Astoria used to be. Oh, it's all been knocked down now.
Oh,
And
it's
I
all been
was sat.
moved, is it? Okay, it's being knocked
Oh,
down. It's been knocked down, is it?
they've completely knocked it all down to for a bigger station. And I was sat there just thinking, normally I had to sort of go, and it was probably talking to a girl or something. And this punk came out of the pub because it was a metal pub. And then just walked along, turned his head, and a stream of vomit had come all the way out. And it was like a perfect rainbow arc of just beer and awfulness. And then just turned, didn't even wipe his mouth or anything, and just carried on walking. It was like the most elegant, disgusting thing you've ever seen in your life.
It wasn't Kev Adams, was it?
No, this. No, but it was an archetype where he had like a massive mohawk. So everything worked. It was like the most punk thing ever.
Wonderful. Okay, we're going to go for a quick break, and when we come back, we can start talking about your career in miniature designing and how you got to become established as a sculptor for, great companies like Futsal in particular. So we'll be back in just a minute, Paul.
Okay, no problem.
But yeah, let's talk about your work with Futsal, because that's how I discovered you. With your Baron's War range, which was highlighted on Tabletop, which is a YouTube channel that Jerry and the other guys run, and they sort of showcase lots of wonderful projects coming out from game developers out there. And I thought, looked at these, and I thought, wow, because I'm, for me personally, I'm not a historical Buff. I'm not into historical gaming. I found it very boring early on in my younger years, and it wasn't much of an attractor to me. But when I saw the Baron's War stuff and
Right.
other things related, like Test of Honor and that kind of thing, the presentation was very good. The miniature range was very nicely done. The miniature painting was very high standard. It's come up in levels, I think, to we're at a point where, it's competing with the other fantasy game ranges out there, I think. You know what I mean?
My interest in wargaming has always been mass battles. I've always liked those big diorama displays at sort of museums and stuff. So I'm very much of the big scale stuff. But I not have the patience to paint hundreds of figures. But I like those are the things I like seeing. But also, I love skirmish gaming with Mordheim, and was one of my favorite games. I think
No.
everyone's favorite game. But coming back to sort of how I got into sculpting, so when I worked at GW, like I said before, when people weren't coming into the store, I sort of would be making my own stuff. And then I collected an Empire army. And I had a gaming guy, friend, a guy called Andy Sherwell. I started with this Empire army, which was in White Dwarf. I'll send you some pictures. I was starting to make things like a Knights Panther musician or a musician for other units, or a standard bearer for my flagellants and things like that, and converted my own elect count and general. You couldn't get so, but it would be basically cut one figure in half and then put another, onto another figure. And me and Andy Sherwell used to, we'd game a lot. We had our own little gaming club, and then he bought a company called Gripping Beast,
Oh.
which is a miniatures company. And he knew that me and another guy who worked for Games Workshop at the time, Andy Dormer, were into sort of converting figures. So he asked us to do some small bits for him. And for about a couple of years, I've been making the odd little figure for them, mostly converting figures, miniatures they haven't got in their range that they needed. And then I, back in 2002, so I'd left Games Workshop at that time, and I was working as in a wood flooring company as a sales assistant, which was like high end. At the bottom of the, I was at the bottom of the ladder. I was a shop boy basically, but I was earning top GW manager wage.
You're right, yeah.
So while I was doing that, I was sort of doing more historical stuff. We were really into Warhammer Ancient Battles.
Oh, right.
So that was a real, we could get our historical
Yeah.
fix and also our Warhammer fix at the same time. So we
That's
were big into that. So I started to do a few conversions. And then a company called, what was it, Battle Honours? Yeah, Battle Honours in Evesham, they used to import stuff from America, and they asked if I would make. They were looking for sculptors to do a range of early First World War figures, and that's a period that really interested me. And so they asked me and Andy Dormer if we would do a test figure for them, and they were happy with them, and that was my first range. But it meant I could sort of leave my job and then and do sculpt full time. And the I went to my dad's. I can remember quite vividly because me and my fiance, now my wife, went to my dad. We went round to see my dad before we were going out for the night, and I said, "Look, this opportunity's come up," and he just sort of turned around and said, "Well, you might as well take it." Is it something you want to do? And I was like, yeah, it's something I would like to do. And he said, well, there's not, you're not really ever going to get a chance to do something that you ever want to do. So why not? And I was like, yeah, it's great. So went on to do that. And then sort of by, it was the day after I went out for a night out with friends, and then funny enough, met, it was a great night because we, I found out I was going to be a sculptor for the first time professionally. Went to a nightclub, met our best friends at this nightclub that night. Yeah, so it was a sort of a perfect evening. Next day was Salute, went to Salute, and then the next day, that Monday, I was a figure sculptor.
Wow.
Then the world sort of came to realize that actually you need to sort of knuckle down, and this might be a lot more harder work than you expected it to be. Yeah, and I did that for a couple of years. Started to make be interested in we our gaming club, we used to play a version of Warhammer 40,000 called Warhammer 44, but it would be Second World War armies as opposed to 40K. And there was the odd figure that wasn't available, so I think I made like a German medic and other figures. And a friend of the Gripping Beast, a guy called Simon Bargery, went, oh, have you thought about making these for yourself? And I was like, well, no, not really. Well, I would like to. It'd be quite nice. But I haven't really given it much thought. And he said, well, look, I'll put in £500 of my own money and you give £500 worth of sculpts and we'll start a little, see how it goes. And then from there, we started a company called Bolt Action Miniatures, which has kind of gone on to do Warlord Games, some quite good business. And then from there, I had some distribution with a company called Brigade Games that I still work for in the States. And it sort of word of mouth through companies. A company, one of the biggest, my Gay Games is one of my biggest customers, and Empress Miniatures over here in Oxford. They got to sort of know and then built up relationships with companies. And then Andy Hobday of Futsal Miniatures, I knew as one of my shop managers when I went back to the Plaza in '97, got in contacted about doing some work. And the rest is history when it comes to futsal.
It's incredible how many connections you can draw back to Games Workshop from the people in the industry now, isn't it?
Oh, massive. Absolutely massive. He's guy all over the world you find someone that you probably not 6 degrees, more like 2 degrees of separation from, and that worked or has been at the Plaza store at some point.
Yeah, it's incredible, eh? It's wonderful. That's great because, like Test of Honor, Grey Fanell Games, Graeme Davey, he's ex GW, he's actually ex GW staff, like the studio staff, White Wolf editing team, So, yeah, you can always go back, Warlord Games, ex GW, John Stallard and crew and that kind of
Oh yeah,
thing.
I worked. Yeah. Well, one of my, I did some of their first figures were mine, sort of the metal figures to go with their Romans, and then, so we built up. Over a period of time, about 5 years, we built up Bolt Action Miniatures, me and Simon. And then it got too big for us because we were taking it to shows. It was just in Simon's garage. He was in Portsmouth, I was in London. And then Warlord Games offered us some money that we couldn't, say no to. And that's how Bolt Action Miniatures started with Warlord Games. Yeah, it's always come through for me, sculpting, which has been good.
Yeah, that's good to hear, Paul. That's nice, mate. It's great that you can make your love of doing something very creative, and now it has become your full-time career for the last 20 years, and it looks like it's
Yeah.
going to continue on for as long as possible, which is great.
Well, hopefully.
Yeah, you seem to be very high in demand, mate. You seem to be very, very highly in demand, and I think Futsal Miniatures are onto a really good thing here with Baron's War and the different ranges they'll produce in the future and different historical periods and what have you. Now, you did talk about a World War II themed Kickstarter that will be coming out in the future.
Yeah.
And I saw some miniatures of that, which, I'm not a World War II guy, but wow, I saw those miniatures and I was really amazed how good they were. Like the character of those, I think they were paratroopers,
Yes.
English paratroopers, and
Yeah. So it's with one of my long-standing companies, Empress companies that I've worked for, which is Empress Miniatures.
right.
And I did British Paratroopers. I think they were like the best figures I'd done for when I owned bolt action miniatures. Some of them are still available through Warlord Games. I was so pleased with those, but looking now, I'd you know the I'm a bit better at sculpting. And Empress asked me to do some what Second World War figures for them, so I've done some Volksgrenadier, which are for the Germans, which are like not the best level of troops at very end of the war for the Germans. Some Americans for the Battle of the Bulge, and some British, again the same sort of period, so all winter. And we wanted to do a Kickstarter, and we our first thoughts were Soviets for as a Kickstarter, but then Putin had just made that sort of not flavor of the month, so we thought about what could we do, and British paratroopers have been sort of really they're a very popular force to play in games like Chain of Command by the two Fat Lardies and Bolt Action, so they're quite well catered for, but we wanted something that people that would already have British paratroopers would want, and it was doing the Market Garden, which is a bridge too far if you've seen the film. And we didn't want to depict them as they just landed, which most ranges do. We wanted to depict them that 2, 3 days in, where they've dropped all their kit's worn, some of them are wounded. There's lots of famous characters to portray as well, and I think that sparked quite a lot of imagination, and it done really well. So we're really pleased with how that's going. And in fact, I'm busily sculpting the next phase for that at the moment, along
Wonderful.
with a project for Andy and myself, which is going to be some fantasy figures.
Yes, that's a great segue because I saw on Facebook there is a Hobday & Hicks page
Yes.
which
Yep.
is dedicated to this fantasy rage that you are producing for Andy. And
Oh, no, it's for me and Andy.
oh,
So
just for
it's,
you and Andy. Right. It's just you.
yeah. So this is,
Right.
I'm dipping my toe back into the miniatures realm again. So this is for myself and Andy. Yeah, it's really exciting. So, I mean, I might have said earlier I'm more of a historical gamer as opposed to a fantasy, but we found that a lot of people were using our Baron's War figures, especially the lightly armored, like the pilgrims or the peasant figures that we'd done in fantasy settings. And we thought, well, it would be great to sort of do a line of figures inspired by, fantasy, but very much inspired by sort of a dark age feel. So that's what we're embarking on. That's what Hobday and Hicks is all about.
Yeah, no,
So
it's
we're
really nice looking miniatures on there. And I want to give you a shout out to HVM Workbench because
yes.
the person responsible for painting and especially the photography, the atmosphere this
Oh,
person can
yeah.
capture in these pictures. I mean, for Baron's War, that sold me on it because you know, you can have beautiful looking miniatures, but unless they're painted perfect or beautifully, and they're presented in a way that captures the atmosphere of what you're selling. It's a big contributor to, getting people to cross that line and say, yeah, I really want to get those miniatures just to paint, or I want them for the game or whatever.
He's, I mean, we've worked from him with him, I think from the first we've done four Baron's War Kickstarters and I think he worked with us on the first one, I think, but definitely from the second onwards, his work is been invaluable to the actual Kickstarter progress. So we're very fortunate to be able to work with him.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic. I actually ordered my miniatures yesterday. I can't wait to get
Oh.
them. Because they're all your sculpts, of course. But
Yeah.
just going by the promo stuff on Footsore's website, I was completely sold. I've been dreaming about these miniatures. Like I'm just saying, I need to get these things
Wow.
because they're so beautiful. I've
Thank
never
you.
been attracted to any historical stuff before in my life, but this whole package has just sold me on it completely about the Crusades and all that kind of stuff. Even the Islamic forces, they're painted so well. I mean, they're designed so well, but they're painted so beautifully that I'm just like, yeah, this is what I really want to do. I really want to get the same sort of style and the way he's painting them, and the detail and the shields and all the fabric, detail work he's doing on those. Yeah, it really sold me completely on that.
Oh, well, that's fantastic to hear. Well, hopefully the miniatures live up to your expectations.
No, mate, they look really cool. I really, really love them, honestly. So yeah, I really hope to when I get them, I'll do a video, like an unboxing kind of thing, and showing
Oh,
people
okay.
the models, how they are delivered to me, and how they look out of the blister or packaging and that kind of thing. So I can
Yep.
see the casting, and the level of detail in the models. Because yeah, I think you guys do a fantastic range of miniatures, and it's just getting that more exposure. So hopefully through the Crown of Command,
Yeah.
we can help do that for you guys and get more people either picking up the miniatures for various different systems they're playing. If it's not Baron's War, you can use it for various other different game
Oh,
systems.
yeah. I mean, there's no, I mean, because when we did our first Kickstarter, we didn't actually have a rule set. I mean, that came with the second Kickstarter, Baron's War. It's snowballed. That's been the beauty with it, is that we've been able to build a community. Along with it, and I'm not. That's where I get my enthusiasm for, because I don't. I literally have about six or seven painted miniatures in my house. My enjoyment has always been building or sculpting figures. So, when I go and see people, or when I see people's work that they've spent their time painting or collecting stuff that I've made, that's where I get my enthusiasm from. And to see, the Baron's War, like the Facebook page and people's work, is the thing that really, that gets me fired up. I mean, I've got more painted Spitfires in my workshop for making model kits than I have painted figures. That's not that I don't, have I love going to shows and seeing and massive displays and games on people's work, but yeah, it's always been this part of the hobby is the bit that's always interested me, as opposed to sort of the painting. But I could never, you well, it's apart from the time when I used to be able to nick an hour's worth of sculpting when no one came into the store, that was something that was pretty frowned on. When I worked at GW, so now I'm getting to live my dream basically, which is great.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I'm really happy for you, Paul. That's great, mate. That's awesome. And long may that continue. Hopefully
Well,
that
I hope so, otherwise it will be out on our ear.
But you always seem to be in demand, and that's the good thing about it. And I think, with your partnership with these various different companies, the ranges grow, and then different periods get talked about and that kind of thing. And I just want to express too that, like I said, and I think many people know me, I'm not a historical gamer. I've never been one. I've tried Warhammer Ancients, and I dabbled with that with my naked Germans, and it was interesting. But you know, it wasn't really my thing. But with this, with the Baron's War stuff, it actually got me interested in learning about the history. So I started
Oh,
looking,
good.
tracking down
Yeah.
some PDFs on the Templars and the Templars, I should say, and the Crusades, and learning about
Yeah.
the various different sects and factions and all that kind of stuff. And that's never happened before. And Test of Honor did the same thing to me as well, because I live in Japan. You know, I'm interested in
Wow.
samurai, the Sengoku period, and that kind of thing. So
Just so that I know, I can kind of get in the atmosphere. So I've been, some of these elves have been, not so much watching anything fancy, but sort of dipping my toe into YouTube and people's sort of fantasy collections, or you know, sort of anything to do with special effects for fantasy films or anything like that. But I'll need to sort of immerse myself in the period, or definitely documentaries on YouTube on the period, and obviously that'll be feeding itself in. And getting the creative juices going. But it's if you've got a range of miniatures, if it's a fantasy range, you know, you'll be attracted by the range and then you'll read about the lore. So you're just in effect reading the lore about the Baron's War, aren't you, at the moment? That's you're just immersing yourself in the period. So it's
I think it attracts me because there's a certain level of mystique behind it.
yes.
And World War II is just too close to home, because my grandparents lived through the Second World War in the Netherlands under the occupation of the Germans, and
Yeah.
certain flashbacks they had, you know, even when I was, you know, 20 odd or something like that, there were certain incidences where, you know, they wouldn't talk about the war. And you know, I remember my grandmother sitting with me in the room one day, and the one of the military, like the RAF, flew over our house really quite low,
Yeah.
and she just bolted up, you know, like just out of shock and, you know, terrified, thinking the Germans, because it just brought back all these memories of, you know,
Yeah, I can understand
back at
that.
war. So yeah,
Well, I
but
mean, coming from the UK, I mean, my
yeah, of
grandfather in
course.
Italy,
Yep.
and we have a completely different experience because we weren't occupied. So I think it sits in a different mindset with us, to the
Yeah.
point where I think my grandfather went to war to escape his home life, as
Right.
opposed to,
Must be
yeah.
that good, isn't
I think there's a good reason my dad was an only child.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, it's a different experience for us as opposed to, you know, people that lived under the occupation. And things like war films have captured my imagination. And some of the stories that my grandfather told me when I was a boy, I mean, a lot of them now, if you sort of did read between the lines, must have been absolutely horrific.
Yeah.
Well, must have been. They were absolutely horrific. But it was all exciting at the time.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and capture the imagination.
Yeah, that's wonderful, mate. That's great. Well, look, mate, honestly, thank you very much again for today. I wish
Well,
you all
thanks for having me.
success for 2024, mate, in your Kickstarter or sculpting endeavors with various companies you're working with.
Yeah.
We will stay tuned to see what they're all about. I'll leave some links in the show notes for this video and the podcast so that people can go to those Facebook groups so they can keep in touch with all the updates of things coming out.
Yeah, so for the fancy stuff, it's Hobday and Hicks, and obviously the Baron's War is Baron's War on Facebook, and Empress Miniatures have their own, and so do Brigade Games. They all have their own Facebook pages, so keep up. Or if you want to, I do post every now and again sculpting work on my own page on social media, but it's mostly models of Spitfires that I'm making, or playing rugby. So, yeah.
I saw those, they're fun. But I know that a lot of our listeners are into, you know, historical gaming, so they should tune into what you guys are doing, because yeah, like I said, I think it's exciting. I think it's bridging, it's getting closer and closer to, you know, to bridging that gap between, you know, dull, boring photographs of very old miniatures in historical gaming, but now becoming more exciting, you know, visually exciting. And it's, and the rules themselves, the game rules they're making now are becoming much more in line with a lot of other fantasy type systems out there too, which makes it just easier for people to get into.
Well,
So yeah.
Boris and Mark of, is it Weymouth? Weymouth?
I think so. You can't pronounce it either. That's good.
Yeah,
I think it's Wearmouth, but I don't know. Yeah.
they're doing a great job of doing a rundown of the rules for Baron's War. So yeah, give it a look.
Absolutely. I've been watching those videos and they've done a fantastic job. Watch the Battle Report too. And
Yes, yeah.
they've got a great way of presenting the game. And they've got a couple of good guys there, you know, running through the demo of the game as well and talking about the rules and stuff like that. So I'll leave links in the show notes for them
Great.
as well, because they're just starting out and I want to give Boris a good helping hand with some more subscribers and more eyes on what he's making there. And who knows, the Chronicle Men might have their own Baron's War game at some point if I can find anybody or con them into playing a game with me. We'll see how we go.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you'll be able to find someone.
I'm sure we can do a solo otherwise, or do a remote play or whatever. I don't know. I'm really
Yeah,
excited
yeah.
about it, actually. I'm really excited to get these miniatures painted and, you know, making a nice tabletop and with terrain and everything, and then start playing it. It'll be really fun.
Fantastic. Oh, it's brilliant. Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks very much again, Paul, for all your time and
Oh,
for
no, thank
sharing
you.
your story. I really appreciate it, mate. And maybe we'll have you back talking about your very first White Dwarf magazine that you ever saw. Can you remember what issue that was? White Dwarf issue one something?
Well, let me get them. So the first one I was in was 210.
Right.
But that was a bit on the Plaza store itself.
Right, okay. Yep.
With my first ever sculpted miniature, which was a full sculpt, which was a giant. Then it was 228, which was a Christmas edition. There you go. Don't know if you can see.
Oh yeah. Wow. All
So that
right.
was my Empire army.
Awesome. Okay. Now
I'll
this
send you some
army, of
pictures.
course, has sadly been sold off
Yeah,
between
it's owned by the John Stallard, who's the owner of Warlord Games.
Right. Well, I reckon you should get in touch with John and say if you still got it, you can sculpt him some miniatures and trade for getting it back.
I think I'd need to be sculpting a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see how you go, man. I know you want it back. That's a beautiful looking army. The Perry stuff was just amazing, you know. It's
Oh yeah, I anything. I'm a big I like the pomp and the ceremony of Napoleonics, just
right.
the color and what they do for their miniature, their Napoleonic stuff. Yeah, so I probably like all the boring sort of dusty historical stuff that you're not sort of that into, but what they do with their Napoleonics is just it's just amazing.
Now, whatever the Perrys touch, they just turn to gold. I've got all their samurai miniatures here, which are now, what, 20 years old at least, and they're still beautiful miniatures, still gorgeous to paint. You know, they're wonderful old school miniatures. So, yeah, whatever the Perrys do, they really do it well. So.
But they just had an edge of realism. Even with their fantasy stuff, it's
Yeah.
just has a feel that I don't think any other sculptor managed to get.
No, they had something magic in their fingers, mate, when they were just making those little toy men. I think they just had something about them that gave the, you know, they made their own, you know, impression with every miniature they made. Because you, when you pick something up, you just know, okay, that's a Perry, because it just had a distinguishing features about it, or the way, the style of how they did things. But I suppose Jez Goodwin's the same. You know, you look at something, you just know it's a Jez Goodwin. And I think for you yourself, I think, you know, you just know that's a Paul Hicks miniature. It's got a very distinguishing style to it. So, which
Oh,
is,
okay. Well,
which 3D sculptors don't have, you know what I mean? Like, that's why I like traditional sculptors. I like the feel of the heft of lead. I like all that because it's got, you know, part of yourself in the miniature. And I think a lot of the modern style stuff just doesn't have that. It's a very disconnected kind of thing.
Well, it's not immediate. I like to. I've always liked to make things with my hands, and be connected with, just instant. It's more of an instant gratification. And the last thing I want to do is work at a computer all day,
Yep, that's it, mate. I know. That's right. Yep. No, I can totally understand.
and not have anything to show except for a picture on the screen.
Yep, that's right. Yep. I know. It's a modern thing, but I'm really happy that to see that the traditional crafts are still around and people still appreciate it. That's the main thing. So, but anyhow, Paul, look, I'll let you get back to work, mate. I know you're very busy, and thank you very much for your time again today. But we'll have
No
you
problem. Thank
back.
you.
We'll keep in touch with one of your white dwarves, probably featuring your Empire army. That'd be really nice to showcase at some point. So we'll...
Okay, I'll try and get it scanned for
Good on you, buddy. Thanks very much again, eh?
you. Cheers.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Thank you.